south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started. You know, I talk a lot on this program about how Latin America is an ideal place for older, retired, and even disabled folks to come down here and live without the shame of having to really scale down your lifestyle because you're on a fixed income and you have a lot of medical expenses. Medical expenses that eat away quickly at whatever nest egg you might have had, since Medicaid and Medicare never cover everything. And that's usually the case because I just read in the New York Times the average nest egg for half of the U.S. retirees is $12,000. And often that's just what happens. Suddenly your quality and style of life take a big tumble. You're living a nice middle class or even a little higher than middle class lifestyle, and suddenly you're not 25 and indestructible anymore. Did you know that a good half of aging adults end up in a wheelchair or one of those extended care facilities because you can't live alone at home anymore and you don't want to burden your kids or your relatives? And who in the first world can afford to have a nurse or a nurse's aide come in every day at, what, 25 to 50 bucks an hour? So the sad news is, more often than not, you're stuck draining all of your resources and probably a lot of your family members' resources too. Then when that's all gone, you end up in a Medicaid-approved nursing home. You know what I'm talking about. The ones that smell of vomit and urine as soon as you take your first breath in the parking lot. Man, we all know that's no way to live out your golden years, but that's the fate of millions, if not tens of millions of Americans who haven't got a few $100,000 or more stashed away for a private long-term care facility. It's bad enough now, but think of all those broke baby boomers who are slipping into their golden years. You know, geriatric medicine and nursing homes are about the only growth industries left in the first world, besides that favorite cancer of ours, government. And you know, expat Eddie's been thinking a lot about this nursing home and extended care business lately. Not for him, even though he's lost more than his fair share of brain cells, but for his 82-year-old grandpa up in a nursing home in Texas. And yes, it's one of those disgusting Medicare-approved nursing homes, too. I mean, really, who's got 50 or 100,000 bucks a year to fork out on one of those nice private country club nursing homes? Only about 5% of all first-world nursing homes are in that category. The rest are those depressing and stinky ones like Eddie's grandpa's in. And by the way, you know what Eddie's grandpa calls his nursing home? The devil's waiting room. Anyway, Eddie's prepared to bring his grandpa down here to Latin America, set him up in a nice first world apartment with a great view, a garden, places to walk, and a full-time live-in nurse's aide. Eddie's done the numbers, and he figures he could do it for about $1,000 to $1,400 a month. And that's including everything, the apartment, the live-in nurse, and all the expenses. And her room and board, of course. Now, Eddie's been Skyping with his grandpa lately, but he just can't convince him to come down. Now, he's not wheelchair-bound or anything, but he does walk with a cane, which is no problem at all down here, especially when you got someone looking out for you 24/7. But you see, Eddie's grandfather's like a lot of old-timers. He's set in his ways, and he just can't see leaving the good old U.S. of A. Even though he hates the nursing home, he's depressed, and he constantly complains about it. He believes becoming an expat is unpatriotic. That's because he was a decorated Korean War vet and grew up in that time when people actually admired and approved of their government and politicians. But Eddie says he just hasn't reached his breaking point yet. And even though Eddie's tried to explain to him 100 times how much better his quality and style of life would be down here, still, there's no convincing some people, especially when they're way up there in age. It's that old axiom again. He prefers the devil he knows to the one he doesn't. For him, he said, moving to Latin America is a younger man's game. He said if he was 60 again, he'd move in a heartbeat. In fact, he said for him, just walking across the street is a younger man's game. But he's still 100% with it upstairs. For example, his grandpa said that in the nursing home, the residents have nothing but time on their hands, so they talk and they talk. And one of the topics that comes up repeatedly is always regrets. You know, these are old-timers in the devil's waiting room now. And like Eddie's grandpa says, all they really have to look forward to is their food, their TV programs, the occasional visitor, and their memories. And according to him, a lot of the guys and gals in that home have lived really boring lives, at least by his standards. Because, he says, when they sit around and talk about things like regrets, the things that they regret about their lives, it turns out that these nursing home old-timers rarely regret things that they've done. Instead, it's the things they didn't do that they regret. Like that trip to Machu Picchu or the Great Wall of China or to the pyramids in Egypt. Or even doing inexpensive things that take some nerve, like skydiving or hang gliding, whitewater rafting, or even just going to a firing range and shooting a gun. And you know, when you hear old-timers talk like that, it's pretty sad. But plenty of members of my family, and I'm sure in your family too, will end up old and in nursing homes regretting the same things these people regret. Now, me and a lot of expats are of the opinion that you try everything once. Well, almost everything. Although I do try a lot of new things, I personally try to avoid the things that might kill me or too many of my brain cells, or things that would make me cringe if I reflected on them later. I won't go into any detail here, but you know what I mean. That is, I'm not about to eat monkey brains or pet a cobra or swallow a sword, you know what I mean? But I'm willing to experiment at least a touch with things that people might think are a bit out there. And practically every other expat I know feels the same way. Why not? Expats by nature are adventurous. We wouldn't be down here if we weren't. Now, here at the Expat Files, we talk about everything and anything that has to do with expats in Latin America. Nothing gets censored, even the far-out stuff. And how we live, work, play, and or do business down here is just part of what we talk about. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't at one time or another touch on a special subject, a very delicate subject, I might add, that I've never touched on yet, though I get email inquiries about from time to time. And it's often a hot topic when expats get together too. Specifically, those Latin American shamans and those mind-expanding rituals we all heard about. You know, those secret ceremonial drugs and potions that the Incas and the Aztecs and the Amazonians and the Mayans have taken to put them in their altered states. Now, I'm not talking about those common street drugs like cocaine and marijuana and heroin and peyote and all that. Sure, that stuff's available down here. It originates down here, and it's dirt cheap. But to tell you the truth, very, very few expats I know ever indulge in that stuff. It's just not our style, you know. And it's true. Great numbers of expats come from the hippie and post-hippie era. In fact, I'd say about 10% of the expats that you meet down here look like they're on their way to a Grateful Dead concert. They've still got some of that hippie look, but they're much more clean and manicured. These days, they're new-age tree-hugging softcore capitalists, you know. The Gringo Advantage works for them, too. But they're not free-love, drugged-out hippies anymore. Most of them are respectable small business owners. So what about recreational drugs? A lot of these guys do engage in the occasional spliff. And why not, they figure? At $10 an ounce, an equal amount is cheaper than a pack of cigarettes in the States. And it's decriminalized and virtually legal, and there's no enforcement, so there is a certain amount of it going on. But not much. From what I see, the drug of choice with 80 or 90% of the expats I know is alcohol. And sometimes it really does get out of hand with expats living on the beach. In fact, one of my very own partners, a really nice guy from Canada, came down to Costa Rica, bought a house on the beach, and within 6 months became a case of beer a day drinker. So it can happen. Especially if you live in that heat and you don't have any hobbies except sitting in a hammock and watching sports on a big screen TV. But let's get back to those mystical shamans and what they're doing in their spare time. Now, expats and gringos, once they've been down here for a while, become very curious about that shaman drug, ayahuasca. Now, you're not going to find that stuff up in the States or Europe, though supposedly you're supposed to be able to get it mail order and mix it up yourself, which is something I don't trust and would never want to do myself. Besides that, up where you come from, it's illegal, like everything else these days. Anyway, occasionally down here in Latin America, you'll run into the odd expat and he'll ask you confidentially where he could pick up some ayahuasca. And I usually say, what are you asking me for? Do I look like a 4'8" shaman with a bone nose ring and peacock feathers on my head? You got the wrong guy, pal. Anyway, people will ask you that if you're down here long enough and you don't look like a state trooper. It's all about that supposed mystical experience that the shamans have been tapping into for thousands of years. And until now, I had my doubts about the whole experience and never went looking for it myself, though of course I was always curious, like most expats are. I just didn't trust what I was hearing. I know for a fact that if you go to any Incan, Mayan, or Aztec ruin throughout Latin America and ask the local indigenous people or the cab drivers, sooner or later they'll hook you up with an official shaman, usually the taxi driver's brother-in-law, who sells shoes at Payless on his day job. Anyway, gullible gringos looking for that ayahuasca experience can always find someone that'll take their money and give them what they think they're looking for. Now, I know this goes on a lot because gringos on vacation, especially backpacker gringos on vacation, are looking for that experience. So all you have to do is hang around a ruin and ask around. And you will get something to drink or smoke and a midnight dance by a part-time shaman on sacred ground. At least that's what they'll tell you. Gringos do expect a show, you know. I know this stuff goes on and I never trust these guys. And because of that, I never took the plunge. Though I have done a lot of reading on this stuff and I read a book by this guy Terence McKenna, kind of a modern-day first-world ayahuasca guru, who spent his life studying the shamans and their potions and DMT, which is the active drug in that stuff. I've even had some in-depth conversations with an expat who went on his own weekend ayahuasca retreat with a part-time shaman who actually was a taxi driver by day. I went to the source. Expat Eddie, of course. And he said he quickly located a source by just asking one of the tour guides at the Tulum ruins. That's Mexico, about an hour south of Cancun. And Eddie said, in the end, it wasn't the real McCoy either. So anyway, what's so cool about this ayahuasca stuff? And what makes it so different from the other standard hallucinogenics, like LSD and peyote and stuff? Well, let me read you this general explanation. And then you tell me if you wouldn't give it a shot if you had nothing to do for a weekend. All right, it says here, people who have consumed ayahuasca report having massive spiritual revelations regarding their purpose on Earth, the true nature of the universe, as well as deep insight as how to be the best person they can possibly be. Now, that part sounds like a ripoff of an army recruiting poster, doesn't it? But let me read on. This is viewed by many as a spiritual awakening, often described as a rebirth. In addition, it's often reported that individuals can gain access to higher spiritual dimensions and make contact with spiritual or extra-dimensional beings that can act as spiritual guides or healers. Now, if you believe just half of that, I can see why so many gringos and expats want to get in on some of that action. Now, I know that sounds awful touchy-feely and new-agey, but before you jump to conclusions, hear the rest of this. This is the part I like. It's nearly always said that people experience profound positive changes in their life, and it is often viewed as one of the most effective tools in personal enlightenment. However, and this is the part I don't like, during a ayahuasca experience, people often report nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. Vomiting almost always follows the ayahuasca ingestion. This purging is considered by many shamans and experienced users to be an essential part of the experience, as it represents the release of negative energy and emotions built up over the course of one's daily life. Finally, there are many reports of miraculous physical as well as emotional and spiritual healing, and note, there are no yet known long-term negative effects. Scientists say that's because the active drug, DMT, is a natural substance produced in small quantities in every human pineal gland, unlike mind-altering substances like LSD that have no natural human analog. So anyway, like I said, I didn't think I was ever going to get around to it because I just didn't trust the source. And the main reason I wanted to try it just once myself, if the conditions were absolutely right, was the fact that some expat gringos that I talked to that went to Machu Picchu and had the experience over a weekend with some real shamans, all of them reported it was like a reset button. They could sense right away that it knocked down their anxiety and stress levels. The way one of those guys explained it, he said, if you're the kind of person who's depressive or manic depressive or a bit neurotic or you get panic attacks or you have self-esteem issues or you're high-strung or have road rage problems or whatever, the ayahuasca experience will take those things down a notch. And that's what some scientific experts claim too. And I've talked to a few dozen people who tried it, whether it's the real thing or not. Even so, none of them ever reported a bad experience. Everyone I've ever talked to said it was positive and uplifting. But who knows, right? Now, not to change the subject, but every day I try to read one big city Latin newspaper. And you can imagine my surprise when I saw an ad 2 weeks ago in multiple newspapers in Guatemala, Salvador, Honduras, and Nicaragua. It turns out two genuine shamans from the Colombian Amazon basin were coming to visit a number of big Latin American cities, putting on seminars and offering the ayahuasca experience as traditionally practiced by shamans in the Colombian Amazon basin. And believe me, these guys were for real and accompanied by a university professor from Colombia. And they were coming into various Central American countries as part of a cultural exchange program. But they were only going to give one weekend seminar in each country. Now, the question everybody asks is that ayahuasca stuff legal? Well, it's not legal in the United States nor in Europe or anywhere in the first world except Holland. Of course, we know Holland, specifically the city of Amsterdam, as the most drug-liberal first-world place in the world. But what about the rest of the world? Because ayahuasca is considered a sacred religious tradition in Peru and Colombia and all the places along the Amazon basin, it's completely legal in South America. And it has the seal of approval in all the Central American countries, too. That's Costa Rica, Panama, Nicaragua, Honduras, Guatemala, Belize, and Mexico. And when I read in the paper that these guys were coming, that was an aha moment for me. Here's my chance. And to tell you the truth, being the type A, high-strung guy that I always was, coming down to Latin America and living here for 20 years really did knock my motor down a few notches. However, like Eddie said to me, he said, "Johnny, you're a lot calmer than you ever were, but a little ayahuasca wouldn't hurt." He said it might even make me normal. So even with Eddie's dire threat that I might actually become normal, I decided to investigate this university-authorized ayahuasca seminar. And I was impressed. The 2.5-hour PowerPoint presentation was quite professionally done. And yes, the shamans were there all dressed in their regalia. And no, they didn't give the PowerPoint. It was that psychology professor from the university who presented that. And although I imagine most shamans today have a cell phone and a microwave oven, I don't think too many of them know how to put together a PowerPoint. I kind of doubt it. So anyway, I went to this thing and about 15 or 20 people showed up. And surprisingly enough, they were all people of means, educated, college people, white-collar business owners. No common middle-class Latin folk here. And nope, I couldn't get Eddie to come because he was off doing his restaurant thing. Plus, his freeloading cousin's in town, and this little event costs $150, and Eddie didn't feel like forking out any more for the guy than he already had. But that's another story. Freeloaders that come down from the States to hang with their expat relatives. Like Eddie said, if they had any money, they'd take a Caribbean cruise or see the pyramids or check out the Eiffel Tower. They wouldn't come to San Salvador or Tegucigalpa, that's for sure. Anyway, I was sold on this seminar, and I signed up. At that seminar, the presenter, a PhD psychologist, he really de-emphasized and poo-pooed its use as a hallucinogenic party drug, like so many people in the first world assume that it is. What he did emphasize strongly was its use in hundreds and hundreds of clinical trials at big universities, showing very positive evidence that it can correct a number of psychological and physical problems. For example, people suffering from chronic guilt, depression, low self-esteem, post-traumatic stress, self-mutilation, addictions, panic attacks, and any number of neuroses. And as for me, since I attended Catholic schools all my young life, I have my honorary master's degree in guilt, so I figured pressing the restart button couldn't hurt. So anyway, about 10 of us met at 8 o'clock in the evening at a faraway compound used for religious retreats within spitting distance of a Mayan ruin. And as we sat in our chairs in a circle, in a big darkened room with only candles for light, the shaman started chanting and singing and going through his ritual. And I'll admit, I don't believe in all that New Age mumbo-jumbo. I wasn't there for the so-called connection to spiritual or universal consciousness or any of that stuff, though I was ready for anything. But this guy, this shaman, was able to produce the oddest sounds I ever heard in my life with just his throat and his voice. I wish I could have recorded it. Could be the next New Age Monster CD. Move over, Yanni. Now, those weird and wild sounds he was making weren't scary, but they certainly added nice atmosphere. So as he mixed his concoctions and brews and torched up about 6 pounds of incense, we all came up one by one and drank a shot of what we were there for. And it wasn't really horrible tasting like you often read about it on the internet, but it was thick like cold honey. So you couldn't drink it all down in one gulp like a shot. It took 3 or 4 tries before it all slid down. And then we all sat back down in our chairs in that circle and waited for things to happen. And after about 45 minutes, they did. All the while, of course, the shaman is off in his corner, chanting and singing very softly. And to tell you the truth, that was fine with me because I don't particularly like unmelodic, discordant wailing like that. So anyway, I forgot to tell you that vomit bags, or puke buckets, if you will, were strategically placed because part of the experience for most people is tossing your cookies. And I'll tell you, about 8 out of 10 people did. And actually, I would have much preferred that to get it over with and get down to business as opposed to what happened to me and another guy. And I'm talking about world-class diarrhea, folks, which I'd rather not go into detail on, and I'm sure that's all right with you. So anyway, about an hour into the experience, you start feeling very heavy. At least I did. Thick, but very relaxed. Yet you could get up and walk around with no problem. And a lot of people did. They just started wandering, or they went over to the little mats that were placed in a circle on the floor in that big room, along with blankets and pillows in case you wanted to lay down during your experience or actually sleep. And for a while, I did lay down. And here's what happened. With my eyes open, everything was just fine, though I felt a little thick and very relaxed, like I said. But when I closed my eyes, it was like I was watching a strange world go by. A place that had buildings and skyscrapers and houses and bridges and everything, but they were all made out of what looked like brown and grayish colored roots of a big tree. In other words, it was like a regular city, but everything, I mean everything, was solidly anchored to the earth and it stretched way below the surface. And the roots came up out of the ground and formed the windows and the doors and the towers and skyscrapers and bridges. All very beautiful and smooth, not ugly at all, like a horror movie or anything. So far, nothing negative or bad about the experience at all. In fact, I know I had a big smile on my face while this was going on. And everyone else I noticed had smiles on their faces and were enjoying their experience, whatever it was, too. Then, after looking at that city for a while, I suddenly shot off into space. And the stars, though very, very tiny and far away, were moving alongside of me, so I know I was going really fast. Like going through a kind of a tunnel or wormhole. Then I started hearing some very pleasant laughing and talking and giggling. And I opened my eyes, and I was pretty much back to somewhat normal again. And in the silhouette of the dark, I could see the girl next to me, about 10 feet away, sitting on her mattress, talking and giggling and having a great old time. Then she'd get up and walk around and clutch a pillow to her stomach and squeeze it and talk again and giggle. And this went on for about an hour. And you know, I thought, I want what she's having. She's having a terrific time. Anyway, about 2 hours later, and the whole experience lasted maybe 3 hours, the shaman got us all back in our chairs again, and he said he was now going to perform the final step in the experience, kind of like the release mechanism. So we all sat around in that circle again, and he told all the guys to take their shirts off, and the ladies too, but to leave their bras on. And we were all supposed to close our eyes tightly. Then he poured some kind of clear liquid alcohol herbal mixture in our hands, and he told us to rub it on our own stomachs and our backs and on our faces. And then he kind of shocked me. He took a big mouthful of that same stuff, and I thought he was going to swallow it. But instead, he just blew it out like an aerosol spray all over us. And then he did it again and again. Now remember, we all had our shirts up, and there's this weird little guy spitting on us. Well, that brought me back to reality in a hurry. So anyway, it's like 4 in the morning now. And we all went back to our little beds and laid down. Then a little while later, the shaman tapped me on my shoulder and said, "Tell me about your experience." And I told him, and then he said, "Did you see any people or entities or beings in your visions?" And I said, "No, I was just hallucinating about the universe and the planets and stuff." And he said, "No, no, those were visions, not hallucinations." To me, it sounded like he took the word hallucination as an insult. And the word vision as something much more spiritual. I didn't actually buy it, but he did. Anyway, he said, so you didn't have any visions while your eyes were open? I said, no, only when they were closed. And then he said, would you like another shot? And I looked at him and I said, you know, I would, but with this diarrhea thing going, my brain can handle it, but my intestines won't. But he did say if I did take another shot, I'd definitely have visions with my eyes open. But my guts had the last word and told me no. Later I found out the same thing happened with everyone in the group. The shaman came around and asked everyone if they'd like another shot, and they all said no, they were doing just fine. So anyway, around 8 o'clock, we had a nice breakfast. And I was sitting right across from that girl who was having such a good old time, and I just had to ask her. I said, you really were enjoying yourself, weren't you? What happened? And she said, I had a really nice reunion with my son. We went to the park. We had a picnic. We talked. We laughed. It was a great old time. I said, with your son? Did he pass away or something? She said, yes, he was an aborto, which in Spanish means either abortion or miscarriage. And I didn't have the guts to ask. But man, when she told me that, I had to sit back and think about it for a while. Whoa. And you know, after talking to everyone and sharing their experiences, there seemed to be a common thread. Every one of us would at some time or another hear our cell phone ringing, even though we turned them off before we ever started. In fact, I remember at least two times I reached for mine and it was off. So in the end, was the experience worth it? I have to say yes. And did it lower my stress and hit my reset button? I have to say yes too. And how do I know that? Because when I drove out of there at 9 o'clock, I was on a very narrow road, and the first thing that happened is I got behind a chicken bus that was stalled. The driver was just sitting there eating tortillas and waiting for passengers to board, and it looked like he was going to sit there until the whole bus was filled, and it was not filling fast. Now, I sat behind him in my car for at least 5 minutes, wondering whether I should try to pass him. But it was a blind spot and I didn't want to take the chance. Now, normally in a situation like this, I would have laid on the horn and slipped into a mild to moderate case of road rage. But I didn't. And I realized in the moment, I didn't feel at all like getting pissed off at the guy. And even now, a week later, I feel a bit more calm and relaxed than normal. And Eddie, good old Eddie, advised me not to try it again. He says he doesn't want me to be too normal, because there's always a chance, he said, that I'd turn into a deadly boar. So, bottom line, do I recommend it? Did I become one with the universe? Well, I'm just reporting on an incident, though never forget what Eddie's grandfather says. The people in his nursing home don't regret what they did do, they regret what they didn't do. Oh, and by the way, even though those shamans take Visa and MasterCard, someone's just gotta turn them on to some first world deodorant.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.